For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. Jeremiah 29, verse 11, New International Version. I was born and raised in an ordinary Midwestern town in Michigan. I lived in a middle-class neighborhood with my parents, Bob and Betty, two brothers, Rob and Bill, one sister, Betsy, and a small dachshund named Trinka. My father was a general surgeon, and my mother was a homemaker. I enjoyed a pleasant childhood, which in some aspects was idyllic. I did not always have everything I wanted, but never lacked for what I needed. Most importantly for any child, I always felt loved by my family. The creek flowing through the back of our property offered me great excitement and opportunity. I spent many hours in and on that creek, ice skating, boating, fishing, swimming, and exploring. I learned about snails, slugs, and leeches. I learned what happens when a dog eats the bacon from a fishing hook, and I learned not to look a snapping turtle in the eye. My best friend and I built an elaborate freshwater clam farm, only to find out later that pearls are made by oysters, not clams. It was great fun, and it developed my love for being immersed in the outdoor natural world. My family attended the local Presbyterian church, participating in a denomination in which my grandfather, great-grandfather, and great-great-grandfather had been ordained ministers. Our tall, traditional stone church stood proudly on the town square. While the outside was rather formal and not very inviting, its interior arched toward the sky, beautifully displaying large, multicolored stained glass windows. The pews were well-worn and made of a rich and deeply colored wood. My siblings and I sat through Sunday school and confirmation classes, church services, and the occasional youth group gatherings, but these activities were mechanical and boring to me. Although I willingly attended, these various activities seemed to have little impact on my life. My brothers and sisters and I certainly never developed a relationship with a living, loving God while growing up, and I don't recall ever being expected to incorporate God or Jesus Christ into my daily life or thoughts. God seemed to be a Sunday thing, and I do not remember my parents discussing spirituality or religion in our home. In many ways, however, they did model a Christian life for their children. My mother was loving, always supportive, and was an active volunteer in numerous service organizations. My father showed great compassion for those who were less fortunate in their circumstances, and he was selfless in his profession as a surgeon. I would often trail behind my father as he checked on his patients in the hospital or when he was called to the emergency room on weekends. I perceived that his was a life of service, in which he was always kind and respectful to others, was not motivated by money, and always put the feelings and needs of others before his own. As I approached my teenage years, I became more independent and began to hold my own opinions. I discovered that although my father was good at doing activities together, he was not very good at sharing his feelings with me or discussing topics that I considered meaningful or difficult. I adored him in spite of his flaws and was stunned in the spring of 1970 when my parents' relationship crumbled and my mother asked him to move out of our home. Divorce was still scandalous at that time, and I was outraged when my parents' divorce became final in the autumn of 1971. I was in the seventh grade and quickly became a confused and angry adolescent. When confronted by their divorce listing in the newspaper, I could no longer deny that my 1950s-esque image of an all-American family had been exploded. During that period, church attendance was one of the few stable aspects of my life. My two older siblings were already in college, and my brother and I continued to live with my mother in our childhood home. Each Sunday morning, my father would drive me to the local Greasy Spoon for breakfast, then to church services. I was still embarrassed and probably angry about my parents' divorce, so refused to attend the Presbyterian church services with him. Instead, we went to the morning service at the local Episcopal church. We would usually go for a walk after church, then return to his apartment to finish the day with a dinner of baked chicken and green beans, the only dinner he ever knew how to make. While I recognized his limitations, I still clung to the fantasy of his returning to my home and of our family returning to the ideal of my remembered childhood. My mother was young, attractive, and interesting, so I should not have begrudged her the desire to date, but I did so anyway and tried to disrupt the process in any way possible. Mac was the first guy who was serious about my mom after Dad moved out. One evening when I returned home, I discovered that he managed to eat all of the cookies I had just baked, none of which had been intended for him, and I was furious. I made my opinion clear, and I was delighted never to see him again.